Hello, podcast listeners. We know podcasts are a great way to catch up on a program that you may have missed on KSJE, and it's provided as a free service of this radio station. But you know, KSJE is now listener-supported, and so while you enjoy this podcast, we hope that you'll also take some time to join KSJE. Become a member today. It's quite easy to do. Just go to our website at ksje.com/support and pick the level of support that best matches your budget. Thanks again for listening. Here's your podcast. KSJE is supported by San Juan Regional Medical Center, here to meet your urgent and emergent medical needs, whether they are COVID-19 related or not. Medical emergencies happen when you least expect them. Whether it's a stroke, heart attack, illness, or injury, San Juan Regional Medical Center's caregivers are here to provide care to you and your loved ones. Find out more online at sanjuanregional.com. It's 8 o'clock. It is Wednesday morning, April 14th, 2021. Good morning, everybody. I'm Scott Micklin, and thanks for tuning in to KSJE 90.9 FM over the air here in San Juan County, New Mexico. 103.3 FM if you're listening to us in Durango, Colorado, and if you're listening anywhere else on the planet, it's KSJE.com or maybe through your smart speaker because you can ask Google or Alexa to play KSJE. Welcome also to our viewers who are joining us. The video stream is going live this morning to the KSJE Facebook page, our Twitter account, and our YouTube channel. So we're glad that you are with us, everybody, because our topic this morning is healthcare in the Four Corners, kind of a bigger picture of healthcare. I've invited San Juan Regional Medical Center President and CEO Jeff Bourgeois onto the program with me to talk more about some of the long-term effects of healthcare in the region, funding for our community hospital, and the way the hospital is providing health care to our region and what we've learned during this last year of COVID-19. That conversation begins in the next few moments right here on KSJE. Then later on this hour, it is Wednesday, of course, and so we will take our weekly trip to the Encouragement Lab. Dr. Mike Hadabaugh is going to be joining me later on this hour. He will be telling us a bit of a warning about evil disguised as righteousness. That's the message this week from Dr. Hadabaugh, so stay tuned for that coming up later on this hour, 8:50 a.m. right here on KSJE. Next hour, Mick Hess is going to take us roving with the arts, of course, and it's Wednesday, one of our local favorites day, and today Mick is introducing us to Hans Freuden. If you haven't heard Hans play, he's wonderful in the San Juan Symphony and other musical groups in the area, but we'll be learning more about Hans Freuden on local favorites today on Roving with the Arts at 9:06 on KSJE. And that'll take us to 10:30 and right on Four Corners, our local and regional author program. Tracy Hales-Vass is speaking with author Jaima Chevalier from Santa Fe about her latest book called Fringe, Maria Benitez Flamenco Enchantment. That is the title of that book, and you'll learn more about it coming up today, 10:30 on Right on Four Corners with Tracy Hales-Vass. Don't forget, of course, in addition to Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter, we invite you to connect with KSJE on Instagram as well, if you're an Instagram person. Outside our studios here at San Juan College, we have a temperature of 50 degrees under mostly sunny skies. We're expecting a sunny day today, but those winds are going to kick up again this afternoon. Right now, they're only around 10 miles per hour, but we're expecting 45 mile per hour gusts by this afternoon with a high today of 73 degrees. Windy overnight, the low 45, a windy day, but cooler tomorrow with sunshine and 64 degrees. Clear and 36 on Thursday, mostly sunny with 59 for high on Friday. Maybe another chance of a shower or two on Saturday with a high of 54. Showers and 57 on Sunday with overnight lows in the 30s. So a chance of maybe some frozen mix there overnight if the correct conditions are there. Joining me this morning to talk a little bit about health care in San Juan County and the greater Four Corners region, Jeff Bourgeois is joining me, the CEO, of course, of San Juan Regional Medical Center. And Mr. Bourgeois, it's great to talk to you again. Good morning.
Good morning, Scott. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you very much. And so I brought you on to the longer program this morning to kind of talk a little bit more in depth about healthcare in the region and of course, San Juan Regional Medical Center's mission of providing healthcare to the area. So let me ask you, I guess, as we get started this morning, just your comments on the overall state of healthcare here in the United States and more specifically in the county.
Well, I will do my best. You know, I think from a national perspective, Scott, it's clear that the entire healthcare system, hospitals as well as physicians and nursing homes, home healthcare providers, the entire system has been through an awful lot this past year. I think they've shown, we as the industry, as healthcare providers, have shown not only our resilience, but our value that I believe we bring to the communities we serve. It's certainly been a challenge. Here in San Juan County, I've been particularly proud of how our hospital has responded. The physicians that have stepped up early on in the pandemic, even though we might not have needed to call upon them, the ones that were willing to volunteer and get emergency privileges at the hospital should we need them. I mean, the communities, the medical communities, response and collaboration was just tremendous. So, you know, I think all in all, it's been a tough year, and no doubt, and I don't want to minimize that, but, you know, I think healthcare providers not only have survived, but have shown their resiliency as well as their, you know, just the true value they bring to any community.
Indeed. And I would ask you too, I guess, are those some of the takeaways, the lessons that we can learn from the past year of just the resiliency, the step up volunteerism and efforts of you and your staff?
Well, that's part of it, but I think lessons learned for us, certainly, one of our biggest assets going into the pandemic was the state of preparedness and readiness that our disaster and emergency preparedness planning had. You know, we were blessed with Dr. Brad Greenberg, who's fellowship trained in this specialty as an emergency medicine physician, but specifically around disaster preparedness and response. And then Ruth Brooks, excellent organizational skills, and they were a great balance in working together. But the fact that we were prepared, that we had physicians coming to us early on saying, this is coming, we need to activate our hospital incident command processes and systems now, even though we had not even had a positive case anywhere in New Mexico at that time. So it gave us a few weeks of advanced preparation as we were watching what was developing in other parts of the country. So the early preparations were certainly, you know, important lessons learned, and we need to maintain that. I think from a more global perspective, and this is all, you know, hindsight and armchair quarterbacking on what we know now versus what we know then, but you know, perhaps on a more global perspective, certainly nationally, if we had had more early interventions around mitigating the risk of spread, might that have helped some of the severity? I don't know, but certainly is something I think, heaven forbid, we should see another pandemic in the next few years. I think at the national level, there's going to be a more concerted effort to have perhaps more universal interventions across our country, hopefully, again, globally. That's an awfully difficult thing to orchestrate, as you know, in the international community, as well as just within our country with the independent nature of all of our states. So those are some lessons learned. I think locally what we've learned is, you know, the value of telehealth, and certainly we'll continue to use that in a greater extent going forward than we were in the past. I think it not only is it's a convenience for patients in many circumstances when the type of care they need is suitable for a telehealth visit, and it is also something that helps improve access to care for patients who might not otherwise have an easy time getting to a physician's office.
Understood. Thank you. And we heard throughout the pandemic, Mr. Bourgeois, the governor and some of her health officials talking about how our state is somewhat of a disadvantage compared to other states when it comes to maybe patient bed capacity and things along that line. And that was some of the concerns that I think some of the state health officials had about getting our numbers too high because we didn't want to overwhelm our healthcare facilities. And you and I have talked about that on another program about the numbers at Salmon Regional Medical Center, and you've seen them ebb and flow and things along that line. But is that something when you talk to your peers around the state that is something the state should be taking a look at, is maybe increasing our capacity in New Mexico so that we're maybe more on par with our neighboring states when it comes to, as you say, God forbid we have another pandemic, but when it comes to capacity limits and things along that line?
You know, that's a great question, Scott, and it's difficult for me to answer. I think early on, you know, the business restrictions and shutdown of elective healthcare procedures, et cetera, going back into end of March, early April last year, were focused, as you mentioned, on not overwhelming the healthcare system's capacity, specifically the collective ICU capacity within the state. And as one of seven regional hospitals, as we were referred to during this statewide disaster response plan, we, like many others, created additional interim, if you will, ICU capacity. And that ability to flex up was key to not only our ability to handle the peaks in ICU volume that we were seeing, but also the state. And then the collaboration between the other regional hub hospitals, and for us, particularly those in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, were instrumental on several occasions as we would look going into the night or going into a weekend at where our ICU capacity was, what our vacancy was, how many beds we had full, and looking back at the most recent 24 to 48 to 72 hours about how frequently we were seeing ICU admissions come to the hospital, we were able to then coordinate with these other hospitals, and if they had capacity, they were able to take transfers from us so we could free up capacity for patients that were coming in through our emergency department. So, you know, I don't know if that permanent capacity is going to be needed, but the interim capacity and the ability to flex up is really important. And to have that as part of any hospital's disaster preparedness plan is really critical. So that's another lesson learned for us locally as well as the state.
Right, right. Well, and I guess the other thing maybe that I think we talked about too was that we didn't see the influx of patients at the same time all across the state. So other hospitals maybe with a lower capacity or lower numbers of patients were able to take some of that overflow from areas of the state that were experiencing surges in cases. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And actually there was a centralized call center set up where if we had an ICU transfer, we would call that, contact that call center, and then they would have eyes on the ICU capacity of the other regional hub hospitals in the state and could direct our transfer to where there was the most capacity. And similarly, but less frequently, we actually took a few patients in from other hospitals due to the same reasons. We, you know, as you mentioned, the peaks came at different times for different regions of the state. So while others were really, really full in their ICU capacity, might have been a time when we had some, and so we were able to help help be part of the overall state coordination of managing the ICU capacity.
Very good. Well, and again, I always like to remind the audiences that the system worked as it was designed, at least as far as we can tell, and as far as you and I having our fairly regular conversations over the past 12 months. It seems to me that that things worked as they were designed, whether it was a peak time or a not so peak time.
Right, and there was some excellent leadership from the core hospitals in Albuquerque through Presbyterian, Loveless, and UNM that we would check in with periodically. We would have these regional hub check-in calls, and their ability to keep us informed of what they were hearing from the state and then share it with us, and then we could in turn share it with our region. It was the coordination was really, I thought, well done in the leadership of that, of our regional hub calls and the medical advisory team. I thought has been very well done to date.
Very good. And then I guess in a state like ours that has somewhat limited bed capacity, that's got to be very important, right? Maybe we don't see that in other states, but maybe they don't have to be as coordinated in other states.
Well, it was critical to our success as a state, I believe, again, to make sure we could move patients to where there was ICU capacity to care for the patient. Countless times, if we went back over the history of this pandemic and looked at the transfers that were facilitated ICU to ICU by that call center, really proved its value.
Very good. Let me shift gears just a little bit, Mr. Bourgeois, and talk a little bit about some other issues that are going on in healthcare nationwide. We hear reports of rural hospitals in some parts of the country having to close down because of financial problems and things along that line. I wanted to ask if San Juan Regional Medical Center faces some of those same some challenges. We certainly don't want to see the hospital shut down, for heaven's sake, but what does that mean for our hospital in San Juan County when we hear about these stories from other parts of the country where rural hospitals are financially suffering?
It's a great question, Scott, and I will tell you that we are not in that danger. However, the realities of operating an independent, private, not-for-profit, community-based hospital such as ours, that's our goal, and that is our mission, and that's what our leadership team is charged to do from our board of directors. And we are succeeding and will continue to succeed. What that means, however, is that we have to constantly have our eyes forward-facing to what the realities are of the community we serve, the reimbursement world that we live in from state and federal, largely state and federal reimbursement sources, and make sure we can continue to offer the services that we feel this community needs in a way that's affordable and financially sustainable, all while doing that, providing outstanding quality of care. So it's an extremely challenging yet rewarding task, if you will, for our leadership team. I'm thrilled to be part of it. This is a great team. We've got an excellent board of directors. The quality physicians throughout this community are, again, I've said it to you before, and I'll say it again, I think is one of the most underrated assets in this entire county. We're blessed with really talented physicians, and for communities, particularly given the community of our size, the number and breadth of specialties we have here, it is a real asset. So, I think we have, all the right ingredients to continue to be successful, but we need to keep our eyes on the horizon and make sure we adjust to the realities and changes that continue to come our way. I've been in this business for 30 years now. And when I got in it in 1991, I remember a big conference I went to, and it was called Navigating the White Waters of Healthcare Change. It was like it was a new topic. But what I've learned over these past 30 years is that change is continuous for the healthcare system, and you have to be nimble and adapt to those changes in order to survive, and that's what we plan to do.
Very good. Well, and it sounds to me like you've been treading water for 32 years, Mr. Bourgeois, less than that, maybe 30 years, as you said. But
I've spent my entire career working for nonprofit community-based hospitals and health systems. That's where my passion and heart is. I believe healthcare decisions are best made close to home, and by having our governance here by a local board of directors who's focused on what's best for this community, I think allows us to focus on what we think is best for our community. And it's been a real privilege for me to work in that type of environment for 30 plus years now.
Right, right. And I guess that maybe is one of the key differences between San Juan Regional Medical Center and maybe some of the other hospitals that we maybe encounter in the region or even in our state, having it that local control, that local nonprofit mission?
Yes, I agree 100%. I mean, we're that local control, I think, is so crucial to have you control your own destiny, and you've got to make good decisions, but you have the ability to make the decisions for yourself rather than have a corporate office somewhere else tell you what to do. So we're blessed to have the conviction of our board to help us maintain that independence.
Understood. And I certainly realize that any conversation of the healthcare industry and policies of this country, it's a very complicated subject for sure, and I know we're not going to get through it in the time that we have, but I certainly did want to ask you your thoughts about this. And I guess the other thing is, as you hear maybe some of the talk at the federal level about changing healthcare or changing this or doing that, we have the Affordable Care Act, of course, which was a major, I think, change for the healthcare system. Are hospitals like ours able to kind of navigate those rough waters, if you will, to use your analogy, of some of the changes that may be coming in the next few years, no matter who is in power in Washington, D.C.?
We have to. That's our only choice, guys.
I see, right.
And we have access to some industry experts that really help an independent hospitals such as ours analyze just the wide array of federal rules and regulations, whether they deal with reimbursement or other non-reimbursement regulatory issues that we use as expert consultants to help us navigate what we need to do and how and when we might need to do it. So we have access to those resources and lean on them heavily from time to time when we need to understand new or pending legislation.
Understood. Well, let me switch gears again with you this morning, Mr. Bourgeois, and talk a little bit about economic development. And of all the economic development folks that we talk to here in the region, they point to healthcare as one way that San Juan County can diversify our economy. You mentioned the wide range of specialists and physicians that we have here in the area. Is this something that San Juan Regional Medical Center is kind of adopted to maybe see some of the services you offer as a way to diversify the economy by offering different areas of health care to residents and maybe attract retirees or other industries here because of our level of health care?
Well, in a word, yes, Scott. And to expand on that a little bit, attractive to retirees as well as to employers is to have a stable health care system in the community in which they choose to live and work. I think we are a key pillar in the overall economic development equation for San Juan County. Every dollar of payroll is said to turn over seven times within the local community. So that the exponential economic impact of the jobs that collectively the San Juan County healthcare providers create is very, very significant. This county has a long and successful history of being in the San Juan Basin in the job opportunity and economic stimulation that the San Juan Basin and all its affiliated job creation has supported has been the strength of San Juan County. And we're happy to be what I believe is a very, very strong close second to that by the job creation collectively within the healthcare community in San Juan County. It's extremely important. And then as we look at the services we provide, not only to the community, Scott, in thinking about our conversation today, I just pulled last week's transfer report. This is something that we look at our hospital regularly. So last week we transferred 27 patients in and we transferred 9 patients out. Those patients that went out all went out where they need a higher level of care for cardiothoracic surgery and a lot of pediatric and adolescent mental health needs. Of the 27 patients that were transferred in, only 11 of them came from within our county. So that means 6 of those were out of county transfers, but within New Mexico. This is important. 9 were from outside of our state. So including several from Colorado as well as Arizona. And just yesterday we had a Colorado patient transfer in from Pecosa Springs. So again, the breadth and depth of the specialty services here is important not only to San Juan County, but to the other smaller hospitals within the Four Corners. Also, last week we had some transfers from Utah, in the southeast corner of Utah, where the smaller hospitals exist there. So those hospitals and physicians that practice in these smaller Four Corner area facilities recognize what our capabilities here are at San Juan Regional Medical Center, and see us as a great specialty referral source in many cases. So that in and of itself is a unique economic development component within the local medical community.
Most certainly, and kudos to you and your staff again for achieving that. And again, I know there's been a concentrated and concerted effort, right, to add more doctors in certain areas and certain specialties. I'm thinking of maybe cardiac services and things along that line. That you've made a conscious decision to increase staffing and lab space and things along that line to provide more services to patients who wouldn't then have to travel outside of the area. Isn't that true?
That's true. And we do that both through our employed San Juan Health Partners physician arm and provider arm. So, for example, we've added a pediatrician and an endocrinologist will actually join this month. Will be the only endocrinologist in all San Juan County. She starts on April 26th. We've also added another family medicine provider and nurse practitioner to assist that family medicine physician. And then, the independent clinics in town continue to add physicians. I'm aware of another family medicine physician that joined the Pinion Family Medicine Practice, and then Orthopedic Associates added a really talented young orthopedic surgeon just within the past year, Dr. Tyson Christensen. So it's a collaborative effort. We all need to be successful within this medical community, given the realities of the community we serve in terms of Medicare, Medicaid payer mix, et cetera. So it's been fun to watch our medical staff grow from both an independent as well as employed provider perspective.
Right. Right. Very good. My guest this morning, Jeff Bourgeois, is talking with me. He is the CEO and president, of course, of San Juan Regional Medical Center. We are talking about some bigger healthcare issues that are facing the area and some of the ways that the hospital is providing economic development opportunities for the economy of San Juan County. And Mr. Bourgeois, we just have a couple of minutes remaining this morning. I wanted to ask you a bit about doctor recruitment, which I know is always a full-time job for some of your folks and can be a bit challenging at times if you're competing against other communities, but let us know how it's going. As you said, you've added some new doctors to the staff recently. And so again, when you go out to look for a new doctor, have an opening, the recruitment arm comes into play, correct?
That's right. And I think our recruitment team has done remarkably well. Really, we have one full-time position as a physician recruiter, just one. Mm-hmm. And she stays very busy, and we all support her in various ways once a candidate for a position is identified. In addition to those I just mentioned a few minutes ago, we have a talented young neurosurgeon joining us this summer, finishing his fellowship training in Dallas at a major medical center training area. We're delighted to have him. He wanted to be in the Four Corners, and the opportunity to work with are the two neurosurgeons we already have here who are very experienced neurosurgeons and will serve as a great mentor to him. And then last fall we onboarded I believe it's 8 new hospitalists, most of whom were early in their career, and they've been a tremendous addition to our medical staff, particularly our hospitalist group that is anchored by some really talented, experienced, high-quality hospitalists. Dr. Philpott, for example, who I know you're familiar with, and Dr. David DeVitri, those two really anchor our hospitalist group with their leadership roles. So physician recruitment is never easy in any community. There's a national physician shortage in many specialties, and we have to work hard to create an opportunity to hear that makes sense and really sell the benefits and quality of life that we have here in the Four Corners. And I would say all too often, Scott, that's really the biggest draw. It's people who like the practice opportunity here coupled with the quality of life that is available here. You gotta find those that have both of those desires, and then it's a pretty easy sell. The challenge is finding those people.
Indeed. Understood. Very good. Well, in our final moments, Jeff Bourgeois, I didn't want to dwell totally on COVID, but it is kind of the elephant in the room and the yellow elephant these days. And I know Santa Regional Medical Center has been very vocal about urging the community to do the right thing and follow the guidelines to get us back into a less restrictive color on the state's COVID map. We are in yellow, as I mentioned now, moving maybe to green or to turquoise. And so maybe in our last minutes, a reminder from you about the things that we should all be doing to make each other safe and keep each other safe.
Yeah, you know, we've heard it a million times, I think, almost quite literally over the past year. You know, just the importance of maintaining social distancing and washing hands and wearing a mask when in public settings and in crowds. You know, this has been a real challenge for every state government as well as our federal government to determine what are the appropriate actions. And you've seen how the actions vary from state to state. And I know our state leaders are looking closely at revising the gating criteria, if you will, for the red, yellow, green, turquoise that we have here.
Right.
You know, one thing I'm really, really encouraged about, I looked at the state's COVID-19 vaccine dashboard today, and I believe over 70% of New Mexico residents who are 75 years or older have had at least one vaccine, and over 60% of that age demographic are fully vaccinated. And if you take the next step down, that age 60 to 74 age group, over 62% of that age demographic statewide has had at least one of the two vaccines. So, you know, in a matter of weeks, those two age groups, which, as we know, are the most highest risk for having a severe course of illness and possibly need for hospitalization, are going to be close to or over 70% vaccinated statewide. That's an immensely important measurement for us to understand, because it's keeping those folks safe and keep them from getting the virus so that they don't have a need for a hospital bed. I think that once those two age demographics are vaccinated, to the extent that it appears they're headed to be, it's really going to have a significant impact on the overall hospitalization rate statewide.
Right, which we're all grateful for sure. And again, I think our state has done, and the data supports it, a great job ahead of other states in the country of getting vaccines into the arms of our residents. I believe New Mexico's at the top of that list, and that's a good list.
Yeah, we're on top for once. That's a great thing.
Right, exactly. Well, Jeff Bourgeois, I always appreciate you and your expertise and your knowledge and your insights. And, of course, we certainly appreciate all the work your staff has been doing this past long 12 months plus now to keep us all safe. And we know it's not over, but we certainly appreciate all the work that you continue to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott. I'm grateful for the opportunity to serve here. I'm grateful to caregivers here. And everyone here is equally as grateful for the support our community has showed us during this past year, from all the gifts in kind of PPE and financial support, and just words of encouragement and support. It has really meant the world to us all over here. We're privileged to be able to serve this great community.
It is a great community, and that's why we're all here, and we're all in it together. So thank you for your time this morning. Do take care.
Thank you, Scott. Have a good day.
All right. I sure will. You're very welcome. That is Jeff Bourgeois. He is the president and CEO, San Juan Regional Medical Center, joining me this morning on KSJE. Did you enjoy that podcast? We hope that you did. And if you did, share it with your friends. And if you really want to keep podcasts like this coming, please support KSJE. You can do it easily online at ksje.com.